The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This isn't so much like I'm like, yay, killers. Like this, it's the opposite. I think we're all very fascinated by why people do this stuff. It's the psychology. Like, how are these people created, male or female? How are they crafted into becoming these sort of like hunters, these serial murderers?
Everyone's got their thing.
Hey guys, and welcome to this week's episode of Fanatics. Yes, I am Claire Kramer, and I am here with my lovely co-host. Oh wait, oh hold on. Guys, my ride or die, David Magadoff, is now on paternity leave. So guess what? This week we have the amazing Jake Marin. Come on in and fill David's very large shoes. Hi, Jake.
Hey, Claire. I am so happy to be here.
Jake, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself? Who are you?
Sure. I am a comedian, actor, writer, and game show host who actually is from Dallas, Texas, lives in Los Angeles. I'm married. No kids, looking for our first dog baby. And more than that, I am interested in all kinds of crazy topics. So I'm excited about today's episode. I'm excited about the episodes in the future. And I can't wait to go down crazy YouTube rabbit holes based on what we talk about.
It sounds like you're the perfect fit while David is out tending to his family.
Yes, I think so. And I can't wait to work with you, Claire. And even more than that, I am so jealous because you got to hang out and talk with Amber Benson and I didn't get to do it. So I'm going to be listening to every single thing you say here today.
Well, Jake, let me just give you a bit of advice. When you're my awesome step-in co-host, you should listen to everything I say. And I will absolutely listen to everything you say. That being said, yes, spoiler alert, the amazing Amber Benson is our guest for today's Fanatic episode. Yes, you know her as Tara from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Supernatural, Apartment 407. She's an amazing writer, producer. She directs. She's a singer, if anyone remembers the musical episode in season 6. And, you know, she and Allison Hannigan had one of the first, like, young same-sex relationships on TV. So she's, like, an icon in her own right. I love Amber. Anyway, it could be an Amber love fest here. But she is talking about female serial killers. Jake, what do you know about female serial killers?
Honestly, I know way too much. And I also know that Charlize Theron won that Oscar for playing the monster. Arlene Wuornos. Ooh, that's only one. There's a bunch of them.
We actually talk about Arlene in the episode. No spoilers. I don't want to spoil anything. But it was interesting because, you know, most of the time when people come on Fanatics, they're like, I'm fanatical about sushi or I'm fanatical about yoga. And this topic was a little bit different. Not only in the fact that you will only hear me interviewing Amber for this episode, but in the fact that it's hard to proclaim your love for female serial killers.
Yeah.
Because you're not really in love with the act of killing or the female that's doing the egregious act.
I hope not.
You're fascinated with the study of.
Mm.
So there's a little sort of different vibe to the episode for those reasons. And on a serious note, I did want to give a heads up. Consider this a trigger warning if you are sensitive to topics of murder, sexual violence, physical violence. That is all discussed in this episode. So if that is not something that you are ready to listen to today, please go ahead and hit pause. We will not be offended, and we'll see you next week. However, I think you guys will really enjoy it. So please, Amber Benson talking about her fanaticism for female serial killers.
I can't wait.
All right, Amber, is it true or is it a myth that female serial killers are just copycats of male serial killers?
I think that is kind of like the antithesis of sort of my sort of hypothesis about like why women kill and how they kill and what they do as killers, their MOs. I think women are totally different than men, but I think that is changing. Or you're going to start to see women who kill in the same way that men kill. But right now, when you look at like the data points and the research, women are very different in how they go about dispatching people.
Okay, we're going to get into all the I like that word, dispatching. I had not associated that word with serial killers, but it makes a lot of sense, actually. Dispatching this body. We are talking about female serial killers. And for someone who just has no idea what that means or that females who kill exist, how would you define that term? What makes a female serial killer?
So serial killer in general is somebody who, you know, is a they kill multiple numbers of people. It's not just one person. It's not a spree killer who just like goes out and maybe takes down a bunch of people in one sort of fell swoop. Serial killers are multiples. And female serial killers are different than male serial killers in that they are better, I think, at what they do in a lot of ways. Because there are way more women who kill out there that we know nothing about, because they're very good at hiding their tracks.
What percentage have been discovered that are even able to be data points versus your hypothesis of how many exist? Do we know about 20% of the female serial killers? Do we know about 40%? If you had to just make a hypothesis here, what would that be?
You know, I'm not sure, because there are so many women who kill people that are in their sphere, their domestic sphere. And it kind of is considered an accident, or, you know, if in the sort of example of somebody who goes after children, you know, it's accidental, it's SIDS, it's, you know, all of these things that come across like they're not really killing. This is natural. This, you know, just is bad luck. So it's, I don't know. It's hard to say. I imagine we do know a large number. You know, because the more you do something, the more you sort of open yourself up to being found out. You're going to leave something behind. You're going to make a mistake of some kind. But yeah, I think I don't know if I was going to guess in the ballpark. We probably see 60%, and then there's probably 40% that go undetected.
Mm-hmm. And okay, for you,
that's what just is my guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's a valid guess. And then I was also factoring, by the way, the data points of like what we don't know for male serial killers, and like basically, then my mind was exploding. So let's move on from what we don't know and talk about what we do know. How did you get intrigued into studying about the female serial killer psyche? Like, what is it that drew you in to this topic?
Well, I think the idea of serial killers in general is kind of fascinating. But for me, I don't know, that like feminist streak inside of me is like, well, how come, you know, the dudes are sort of like the big heavy hitters and women are sort of relegated to like, you know, the back seat when it comes to this kind of stuff? There have to be women who kill in this way. And so I started researching, and it became clear to me that there were a lot of women who are serial killers, but there are not a lot of them up to now who are ritualistic psychosexual serial killers, which is sort of like the paradigm, if you will, of serial killer, you know, the Ted Bundys, the Jeffrey Dahmers, where they, you know, torture and get off on the ritualistic, you know, torture of their victims, usually in like a sexual way. You don't see that with women in the same way. Women are sort of driven more, at least up until now, women have been driven by, you know, financial gain, They want attention or sympathy, sometimes revenge. But the motives are very much, I want something versus I have this like fantasy in my head of something that has to be sort of assuaged by going out and acting that fantasy out in a ritualistic way, like men.
Well, it's like, you know, when a woman, yeah, like men. When a woman exhibits with her child, you mentioned SIDS and that, you know, being often a mask for a killing, Munchausen by proxy, where the woman is creating an illness. And it's almost that is the attention seeking behavior, except this results in a murder versus just a sickness, which is crazy. I mean, I just for a woman to do that is crazy, but you know, we're women. So thinking about it, you know, you wonder how many steps away am I from making a decision like that? There's got to be an infinite number of steps, right? I mean,
well, I think that we as a society think of women as being, you know, passive and maternal, and we just can't see them acting like this. We just don't want to see women behaving this way. And so I think we put blinders on. I think you have a lot of very angry and abused women and women identifying people who would act out if they were given the opportunity. But because women, I think for a really long time, were relegated to this very domestic sphere, all you had around you were the people in your life. And so you had to be very careful. Because, you know, you're going to be the first person suspected if all the kids around you are dying or the elderly people you take care of are dying. Do you know what I mean? I don't think it's that far. I think we're not that far removed at any moment from behaving this way. I don't think women are just sweet maternal creatures. I think there's a lot of depth and a lot of rage in women.
I definitely agree. How do you learn about different cases and different data points? What is your, do you read? I loved when I was growing up, Anne Rule, who wrote not just about female serial killers, but about all of them. Are you Googling? What is your form of educating yourself on this topic?
No, definitely reading. You know, The Stranger Beside Me is an incredible book by Anne Rule, who, you know, basically wrote about the fact that she was on a suicide helpline with Ted Bundy and was friends with him and had no idea that this was somebody who was out there committing these really heinous crimes against women, which just goes to show that, you know, when you're dealing with a sociopath, they're very charming and they're very good at dissimulating so that you don't realize what's actually underneath. And I think, you know, we don't want to see women that way. We don't want to look at women as being, you know, sociopaths. We want women to be nice and maternal. But yeah, John Douglas has written a bunch of stuff. He's a profiler, or who was a profiler for the FBI. You know, the internet is a great resource as far as like researching this kind of topic. I honestly got into the sort of female side of it because, like I said, I was curious about like why we don't see women who behave this way, or they're not, you know, part of the sort of the lexicon in the same way as the men. And I actually started, I wrote a pilot that I sold about a female serial killer. And for me, the hypothesis was, well, how do you craft a woman who kills the way that men kill? Because from research, women don't kill that way. You don't see them doing these.
What are the differences? Out. Yeah, tell me. Talk to me about that. What delineates due to gender?
Well, like I said, with like these psychosexual killers, there's something called the McDonald triad, which is part of the research into male serial killers is like, well, why are they this way? And so the McDonald triad basically postulates that if you see these three sort of behaviors in young boys, there is a chance you're dealing with a sociopath or a serial killer. Bedwetting into like, you know, early adolescence, setting fires, and cruelty to animals. Mm. And so there's been a ton of research on the male side, and there's been very little as far as, you know, why women do these things. And I don't know if that's just because these men are so bombastic and over the top, and the way they kill is so bananas that like everyone's just fascinated by it. And because women do it in this very sort of sly, sort of removed way, it's not as appealing. Like the way women kill. So men, when you know, we think about these big ticket guys, they go out and they hunt victims. They have types, they have MOs, they kill in specific ways. Usually there is some sort of sexual component. Mm-hmm. Even if the sexual component is that they get off on the torture and the killing itself, not in like an actual act of you know, mm-hmm. a sexual act, but behavior and what they do is what's attractive to them. And it's very personal and intimate. They like get in there and they like have a very intimate relationship with their victim. Whereas, you know, women have sort of a remove when they kill, you know, and I, this is like a blanket statement because obviously there are women who are not this way, but the majority of them, like it's poisoning, it's suffocation, shooting, it's all at a remove. They're not in there strangling a victim, which is a very intimate way to kill somebody.
Yeah. Face to face.
Face to face, where you know you're getting off on. For women, it's that they're not getting off on the act. They are after something. Mm-hmm. It is a means to an end. Whereas these guys, it's very much about the act itself and the escalation of the fantasy. And every time they do it, it gets crazier and crazier because it's not enough. Mm-hmm. You do it and you're like, oh, I need something more. So then it escalates to the next step. And so you see, you know, serial rapists who then escalate into murder because the rape is not enough. Because rape is not about sex. Rape is about power over somebody else. Mm-hmm. So that sort of the rationale behind why these people do what they do is very different for women versus men.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Does that kind of answer?
Yes, 100%. What is the main motive for women? We were talking about like an emotional fulfillment, you know, men we just discussed, but what does the main motive, revenge? What does it seem to be?
I think a lot of it's financial. Mm-hmm. You know, back in the day, you would have these very, you know, you would have these sort of like lower class women, very poor, who there was sort of this thing where you could take out insurance on the people around you. You know, it wasn't very much money back then, but it was to them. And they would, you know, they would just take out these little policies on the people in their family, and then they would mysteriously die. And then they'd have money.
Right.
You know, that's a financial motive. The killing of somebody in your domestic sphere, I keep using that term, but like women were relegated to the household. Mm-hmm. You know, it's only in the last, since like the 1970s that women have really been out in the workforce and been independent. And even, you know, the last 10 years where women kind of are overtaking men when it comes to going out into the workforce and being their own people. So yeah, then you have women, you know, they call them the Black Widow killers, financial. Mm-hmm. You know, they marry wealthy men or men they take insurance policies out on, and then they kill them for financial gain. Mm-hmm. Something that's really interesting is we talk about Eileen Wuornos. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the film Monster.
Yes, Charlize Theron.
Yep. And we talk about her being sort of like more like she's like the first real female serial killer, they say, because, you know, she was going out there and hunting, you know, taking victims and killing them. She was doing sex work and she would get picked up by these men and then she would kill them. Mm-hmm. But when I sort of started researching her, it seemed to me that she fit more into the female category because it wasn't about really getting off on the killing per se. It was much more about the monetary sort of value of these men. You know, she mm-hmm. had a girlfriend who they were living together in this hotel and she was financially supporting them. And in order to sort of keep this girlfriend in her life, she was making money by killing these guys. So it feels as much or more so about a financial motive than an actual like ritualistic, I get off on killing these guys.
So have you been able to identify a male likened serial killer, or as we are discussing, it more leans towards the logistical female side is the reason behind the killings?
Well, I said before, I think we're sort of in the middle of a sea change because women are going out into the world and they have autonomy in a way that women have never had autonomy before. And you are starting to see women who kill in a different kind of way. Specifically, mm-hmm. for example, there's a woman named Joanna Dennehy, and she's from the UK. They were the Peterborough Ditch Murders. And she had three victims, men that she was engaged in some sort of like relationship with, or she picked up, who she killed. Mm-hmm. And then she had these men in her life that would help her to dispose of the bodies. But she got off on the killing in a way that you don't normally see with women. In fact, she dressed one of the bodies in a sequin dress, placed them in the ditch in a very compromising position because she was humiliating this person in mm-hmm. death, you know, which is you see positioning in male serial killers where they place, because basically they don't think of their victims as real people. Do you know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
They are a means to an end. They are to be used and discarded. They're like garbage, and they place them in these very weird positions in order to sort of humiliate and degrade the corpse. And she did that, you know, so that is happening. I think mm-hmm. it is on the horizon. That's my hypothesis, at least.
With the new Gen Zers yeah. that are going to be killing.
Well, I just think that like the sort of, you know, the idea of what it means to be female in our society is changing.
I was just going to say that I feel like this is a compliment to that generation, by the way. They're very gender blind and also gender fluid, I would say, for the most part. And mm-hmm. I think that that is a wonderful thing. And in killing, it may not be a wonderful thing, but I think it will bleed over, like you said, as these, you know, as we get further away from the 70s when women did have, you know, the women's movement and moving into the workforce and out of the home. You mentioned dispatching. Now this, we kind of laughed about the term, but now I'm intrigued because I didn't necessarily associate positioning the body with a male serial killer, but now mm-hmm. I can recognize that in the news stories I've seen, that is correct. So talk about dispatching and the differences there.
Oh, and like how they kill?
Well, yes. Is dispatching the disposal of the body, or is it the killing and the disposal? Think, or what does yeah, that mean?
So dispatch is just another word for killing. When you dispatch
oh, really?
Somebody.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So yeah, sorry. It's a great word though.
It totally needed another meaning.
Yeah. I've spent a lot of time reading all of this like research material. So I'm using words that I've sort of taken from that.
I think that, you know, I just realized there was actually a sci-fi dictionary, and I think I see an opening, Amber, for your next book. You don't have to like commit yeah. to a script. You just a serial killer dictionary. Like
just
I'm
a serial killer. Well, I do want to say that like, this isn't so much like I'm like, yay, killers. Like this, it's the opposite. I think we're all very fascinated by why people do this stuff. It's the psychology. Like, how are these people created, male or female? How are they crafted into becoming these sort of like hunters, these serial murderers? You know, and we talk about like the idea that like you can have a family where one person, you know, they're raised the exact same way and one person turns out one way and the other sibling turns out a totally different way. It's like some people can endure horrible abuse, physical, sexual, emotional, and they don't do this. And then other people go through the same experience and they, you know, take it outward and they, you know, it becomes, they have to deal with their demons via, like, you know, acting out. So it's really interesting to me and from a psychological point of view. And I think also, like, as women, we walk around going, you know, I feel like I'm a victim kind of all the time when I walk out on the street, you know, like it's scary out there a little bit. So we want to be prepared. And I think maybe that's also why this is so interesting, especially to women. Mm-hmm. And something else that I find really fascinating is that, like, women, for the most part, turn inwards when they've gone through abuse. You see a lot of self-harm and eating disorders and sexual acting out, where it's the opposite with men. And a lot, you know, and like I said, these are not blanket statements. Everyone is different and unique, but sort of, you know.
Yeah.
But with men, there's the acting out. There's the rage and the aggression and the putting it out on other people. And that's interesting. And that also kind of confirms, like, you know, well, why are women different when we talk about murder? And maybe some of that is that just like the makeup of women and how we handle things. And I don't know if that's societal and that's what's put on us as women, or if that's something that is baked into the fact that we, you know, we have families and we raise children. And so, you know, we're not allowed to be violent in that same way. I don't know.
Well, you mentioned, was it the McDonald triangle, the trifecta of, like, markers that would identify a male in their youth? Is there such a thing for females, or is it more a decision-based process of, like, intellectually deciding to go to that next level with your behavior?
Well, number one, there's been so much research about male murderers and very little in comparison with women and people of color. And I think we see that across the board in our society that, like, I mean, just talk about, like, you know, medical research. Most of it is conducted on white heterosexual males. And then that is then sort of put on the rest of us, even though we're all different and how women's bodies are, you know, is very different than men, you know. And I think that's been sort of what's happened with this research as well. So the McDonald triad, as far as I know, is not really applied to women. And I'm not really sure what the markers are.
Yeah.
You know, for women, there's not really a, like, defined, like, the McDonald triad.
I think I'm good not knowing, actually, Amber, because if I see a marker in myself, then I'm going to be like, oh no, how many decisions before, you know? So let me ask you this. How much of, you know, when you sit down in the evening to watch TV or to, like, go on your computer, how often do you find yourself researching, Googling, watching about this, reading about, you know, female serial killers? How often do you participate in this interest?
Well, I listen to My Favorite Murder, which is an awesome podcast.
And I listen to it too.
They touch on all this stuff in a very thoughtful, but, like, lighthearted, because you have to be a little lighthearted with this stuff because it's so awful and painful and demoralizing. And I know they're never making fun of the situation. They're, you know, they're looking at the absurdity of some of it, and the humor comes from that. But you know, I love reading about this stuff. I read fiction in this milieu. Silence of the Lambs is probably one of my favorite films. My boyfriend makes fun of me because he's like, you're the only person I know that listens to or watches Forensic Files when they're getting ready in the morning.
Oh, that is my favorite show. That is my...
Yeah.
It's my hotel go-to. Okay, so did you pull the boyfriend into this? Is he now alongside you participating in...
No, he thinks I'm totally bananas.
Which clearly you're not. So talk to me about the most fascinating character, female character in this world that you have encountered.
Oh, man. Well, you know, the Eileen Wuornos stuff is fascinating because you look at like, she had a horribly abusive upbringing and was very abused by the people in her life and by people in the world. And it's so gutting to like look back at like the trajectory of how she went from a small child to this woman who was out there committing these heinous crimes. You have a little sympathy for her because of what was done to her and the way she was treated. But I mean, for me, actually, what I find really fascinating, what I feel like sort of supports my hypothesis about like how women behave and mm-hmm. this sea change is the like the serial killer couples.
Oh yeah. Talk to me there.
Yeah. So I find them really interesting because the women participate in a way that is not sort of what we've been talking about. It's not about financial. It's not about sympathy or empathy or revenge. They are part and parcel with the men or with other women. So mm-hmm. you have people like Carla Homolka, and you have her guy. Why am I blanking on his name? Paul Bernardo, who were called the Ken and Barbie Killers. They were in Canada, and he started out. What's really interesting about the couples is that, like, oftentimes, left to their own devices, had they never met these couples, they probably would not have escalated to murder. Mm-hmm. Paul Bernardo was a serial rapist. He met Carla, and they got married, and together they started torturing and murdering women and videoing it. And in fact, they tortured and murdered her sister, and Paul raped her. And wow. She was a participant. She helped to drug her sister.
Oh my gosh.
So when you look at it in terms of like, these are women behaving in kind of ways that men behave, mm-hmm. it's not that far removed from, you know, women going from partnership to being, you know, the masterminds or solo performers in this arena. Then you have like couples like Myra Hindley and Ian Brady. The Moore's murders, they killed 5 children. They would, you know, kind of, you know, take them to the Moors and abuse them and then kill them. And they did it as a team. Then you also have like female team killers. You have like Gwendolyn Graham and what's her name? Kathy Wood. And they worked in a nursing home. Mm-hmm. And they murdered at least 5 patients, and they got off on it. It turned them on in a sexual way.
Wow. Well, it's interesting, the dynamics of the killing couples is, you know, there's been studies that prove that like if one person witnesses a crime, they're very compelled to report it. But if 2 people witness or 3 people or the more people that witness a criminal act, they don't feel the obligation because they were part of a group versus being the only person. So I can understand how someone who the behavior wouldn't escalate solo wise can get drawn in a group. Being an artist yourself, being an actor, what would your approach be to playing one of these characters? You know, it's like getting really down and dirty. It's different when you are, you know, playing something in the sci-fi world versus or the genre fantasy world versus like, I'm actually playing a woman who murdered. Like, how do you keep your sanity and portray that role?
Well, I think as long as it's not based on a true story, it's kind of easier because you're you're just sort of crafting this character sort of whole cloth yourself. You know, you're coming up with their backstory. You're sort of, you know, bringing them to life. Whereas the true crime stuff, I don't know. As a writer, I've written a number of true crime things for Lifetime. And to be honest with you, it's kind of upsetting. And you end up really sort of burnt emotionally because you are delving into someone's real life. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, I mean, it's real. It's not just some made up fantasy thing. So I think as I've sort of worked in that world, I've tried really, really hard to be respectful and to look at them or to look at the people I'm writing about in a non-judgmental way. Mm-hmm. And I would assume if I were to be an actor doing that, the impact would be, you know, very emotional and hard to do. And I would have to sort of look at it the same way and try and be as non-judgmental as possible. But luckily I'm sort of removed from the acting thing now. That's sort of like my old life when I was an actor.
You can never let go though, Amber. It will never go away.
But I have, like, as an actor, passed on, like, there was a Manson thing that I passed on. I was like, I don't really feel comfortable playing.
Yeah. It's such an interesting topic, you know, serial killing, female serial killers. Why do you think this intrigues you? Is it something like uncovering the mystery? Like, we've talked a lot about the psychology. Is it a desire to understand, like, the female mind? What is so intriguing and why are you drawn to this topic?
Well, you've mentioned a couple of times the idea of, like, how far removed am I from becoming somebody like this, you personally?
Well, I've also mentioned it about myself, so.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. I think there's something baked into that idea that we all want to understand, you know, how close we could come to behaving this way. And so when you're sort of reading about this stuff or researching it or watching, there's a part of you that's trying to gauge, well, where do I fit on the scale of this? Could I ever, you know, am I one of those people that would kill somebody if they were threatening me or my family? Am I somebody who, you know, if I could get away with it, would hurt somebody? You know, you start to have those questions about yourself. And so looking at, you know, real cases allows you to sort of compare and contrast yourself to them, I think, in some ways. I mean, we all have a darkness inside us. I think the real thing is, you know, do we act on that darkness? It's choice, right? For most of us, it's a choice. I think for the people we're talking about right now in this podcast, I think for a lot of them, there is no choice. Mm-hmm. It's either something happened to them, like they sort of postulate that head injuries, traumatic brain injuries, are a big part of, like, male serial killer, that phenomenon. Oh. that you know, they've done a lot of research, and the majority of male serial killers have some sort of head trauma as children.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So, which is fascinating, right?
Uh-huh. Another marker.
Yeah. So, you know, if you think in terms of that, like, or you talk about PTSD, you talk about, like, you know, all the traumatic brain injuries you see in sports, and then these guys later in life killing their families or doing these horrible things because something was damaged, like, you know, biologically, physiologically. I'm doing, like, a weird head thing here.
I'm understanding it.
Yeah. So, you know, if you think in terms of that, you're like, well, you know, I haven't had a traumatic brain injury that I am aware of. So maybe I have a lot more control over,
my
behavior.
Yeah. And just to dig a little further, what do you think, you know, why do you like studying this darkness? I mean, you know, this side of the psyche, the female psyche.
I guess for me personally, I worry that there's a part of me that isn't, you know, kind and nice that could do something awful. You know, I worry about that. I feel like we all kind of worry about that. We're all sort of like, am I a bad person? Am I a good person? And maybe I'm judging myself against some of these things that I'm reading, going, okay, well, I must be a good person because I wouldn't do that. But I also think there's just something that, I mean, if you just get down to brass tacks, good versus evil, and this idea of, like, inherent good and inherent evil. And are these people who do these, that commit these atrocities, are they evil? Are they just human who, you know, like, they've been damaged? And so, you know, I think the idea of evil is fascinating to me.
Yeah. And really, we could just keep going and going and going, but today we have to wrap. So I would love for you, Amber Benson, to regale us with a love letter to research on female serial killers and data points, so, if you would.
Yeah. So dear research into female serial killers and the multiple data points that we still don't really know about because we have not done enough research into ladies who kill, I in no way condone any of the atrocities that are perpetuated by women who kill or men who kill, but I am very fascinated by why psychologically you guys are driven to this point where you feel like it's okay to take someone else's life. And I spent a lot of time thinking about it and wanting to understand. And maybe it's just I want to understand myself. Maybe I'm scared that, you know, and when I walk out into the world, you're going to be there. But I do a lot of thinking about you. And yeah. Love Amber.
A lot of thinking about you. Love Amber. I love it.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles, just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Jake, isn't it so interesting how the evolution of female serial killers has sort of developed so that now the male situational killer and the female situational killer are sort of starting to mirror each other for the first time?
I'd say shocking, but, you know, women can do anything that men can do. And I guess that includes killing multiple other people. And I'm glad we touched on that this episode, because I've listened to a bunch of these Fanatics episodes and every single one's so different. But I feel like this one was another level, Claire. How'd you feel discussing all this topic?
Well, I mean, it was kind of weird because at one point, and I'm glad Amber sort of like, she sort of pacified me in this way when I had this thought of like, wow, you know, I always say with just life in general, you're 10 bad decisions away from like a completely different life. You know, you can make one or two bad decisions, but as a human, like as Claire, at least I try to course correct. Like if something is really wrong, then you've got to like lock down and get dirty and recorrect things so that everything, the chaos goes away and your life gets back on track. But if you make continually 10 of those bad decisions, then you're going to be in a way different place. And we sort of touched on like, what would it take for you, Claire, or you, Amber, to like murder? It was a very uncomfortable spot to kind of go into mentally, you know, but Amber sort of went there with me, so it was okay. That's sort of like my extrapolation from this episode is like, just even that thought of what would it take for, you know?
Yes.
And I don't even want to talk about it anymore. That's it, Jake.
We're done.
I will say though, I did grow up reading the Anne Rule books. Like lots of girls were reading like Nancy Drew and, you know, the Sweet Valley High and the Babysitter's Club. I was like reading murder. So I have always, much like Amber, had this fascination, which you can sort of mask in writing and being an artist. It was funny. I read one of those memes about being an author earlier today. And it was like the search engine, like if you were to, you know, look at the search engine for an author, it would be something even a serial killer wouldn't allow to be on their computer.
Right? So, they're watching it. Authors don't care.
Right.
So, oh my gosh.
Yes. Well, you know, moreover than that, Amber is awesome. The topic was awesome. But Jake, I want to welcome you to the podcast. Thank you.
It's great. It's great to be here. And thank you for your warm welcome. And I can't wait to join you because this one was so fun to listen to. I can't wait to have some conversations with some amazing people.
I know. You got your feet wet in this one. And next week, you are full on co-hosting with me. So it is going to be a great episode. Thank you guys for tuning in. As we always say, sharing is caring. Share this podcast with your friends. Tell everyone you know. Until next week, Jake and Claire, outie.
Outie. Well, before you go, next week we have a very special guest, J.C. Elliott. You've seen her on Station 19. You've seen her, of course, on Grey's Anatomy as Dr. Taryn Helm. And you're going to see her here next week. So tune in because we're going down a deep, dark rabbit hole of fun where we talk about quantum physics and get into some real deal questions about life and the meaning of it. And I can't wait. So come back and check it out.
Thank you for listening to Fanatics, a Roddenberry podcast. For more episodes and info, head over to wearefanatics.com or tweet your Fanatics thoughts and stories at @WeAreFanatics.
Yes, that's We Are Fanadicts. Our show is hosted by Claire Kramer and me, David Magadoff.
Produced by me, Claire Kramer, and Kelsey Goldberg. Executive producers Trevor Roth and Rod Roddenberry.
Our sound engineer and editor is Elizabeth Joy Windham. And you can thank Stephen Mudd for our theme song.
Catch us next Thursday for another Fanatics episode.